Thanks, guys. So as you just heard from Seth and Dimitri, in this session, we're talking about building apps with .NET, ASP.NET, and .NET Core. My name is Chris Reisner, and today I'm joined by three principal program managers. First, Damian Edwards, Rich Lander, and Mads Torgerson. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Great. Yeah.
Awesome. So the first thing we're going to do today is go over some of the announcements that were made yesterday specific to ASP.NET and .NET. So I think that the big first one is going to be that we have a release candidate of ASP.NET 5 and .NET Core.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's new about that? You know, why are we ready for a release candidate stage?
Oh, that's a great question. So we've been working on ASP.NET 5 now for just a little bit over 2 years. And we've been sort of tracking to this release for a few months now. We're at a point now where we think we can confidently give the product to customers, get some really, really good feedback, give them support when they try and run it in production, including running it cross-platform, which is really the thing that we're trying to, you know, one of the big features of ASP.NET 5, obviously, in .NET Core is that you can run it cross-plat. And so now is a great time for people to try it out.
And I think one of the key takeaways from what you just said is this is a go-live supported thing, so you can get production support from Microsoft for running ASP.NET 5.
Yeah, for the customers where that's important for them, then this is the first release we've had of ASP.NET 5 where that's an option.
Great. All right, cool. So some of the other stuff we talked about yesterday were some new Visual Studio experiences with ASP.NET 5. Can we talk about what that includes?
Yeah, so I'm going to do a little demo later on, but we'll see a lot of the new things that we can do in ASP.NET 5. We've got a bunch of new tooling in Visual Studio 2015. Mm-hmm. We have a new project system with a whole bunch of new features that makes it nice to work with a NuGet-based ecosystem when doing .NET. We have a great new editors for JSON. So we've got some new JSON files that are part of the project setup now as well. And we've got some nice IntelliSense and editing features there. And then we've got a bunch of new settings around dealing with the fact that you're compiling for .NET Core and also compiling for other things like, of course, .NET Framework on Windows. And so we've got this nice sort of dual project system so that you can code and know that, oh, this code's going to run when I'm on .NET Core, mm-hmm. and this code's going to run when I'm on .NET Framework, and I can compile for both from one project type.
And just to kind of recap for people that aren't really familiar with it, the difference between those two things is that if you do want to run cross-platform, you really want to look at .NET Core, whereas the .NET Framework is kind of more the full-fledged
.NET Framework. Yeah, the way to think about when to choose one over the other is .NET Core comes with a couple of really big-ticket items. One is the cross-platform support that you've just talked about, and two is the portability, the fact that I can deploy .NET Core next to my application so that when it runs, it's running in its own sort of isolated little unit, and so that I won't be impacted by system-wide patches and those type of things. Or if I need to, I can run two different versions of .NET Core next to each other, having app A having one version and app B having another.
Specifically, one of the additional features we talked about with the release candidate is the app hosting model, and that's a little bit different now, right?
Right. So in ASP.NET, we have a new web server called Kestrel, mm-hmm. Which is a .NET-based web server that runs on top of a component called libuv, which is a cross-platform C library that lets us do asynchronous I/O and networking and have it work on Mac, Linux, and Windows in the same way. It's actually the same component that's used by Node.js. So we have a new web server that's built on that. And then when you're hosting on Windows, Mac, or Linux, you can either run from the command line using a DNX, which is our new command line that sort of sits underneath mm-hmm. ASP.NET 5, or on Windows, you can run behind IIS, just like you would today, but your hosting IIS is being used in a slightly different way to what we've done in the past in ASP.NET. Previously, ASP.NET would be hosted in process in IIS, so IIS would actually be running ASP.NET inside of it. Now, ASP.NET will be running in its own process in DNX.exe, and then IIS will do the job of starting that process and forwarding requests to it and monitoring that process. So.
Great. Some of the other kind of features or new announcements we made included, I think, one of my favorites and one of the things I think we've heard some really great feedback on, which was the max path restriction, the fix. Are you guys excited about that? You know, is there cheers going through the office when that happened?
Something like that. We've heard a lot of complaints, for lack of a better term, on that over the years, and we'd always wanted to fix that. There were lots of places where there were little checks on max path, basically, if path.length is greater than or equal math path, max path, do something. And when we moved to supporting Linux and OS X, those checks no longer made sense. So we really had kind of a strong motivating reason to clean all that up. And then since we had that implemented on Linux and OS X, it made sense to port that to Windows as well. So we're pretty happy about that.
Great. And I think, you know, you mentioned Linux and OS X. I believe we also talked about eventing and now exception handling and debugging on Linux for .NET.
Yeah, so we have a lot of features that make developers super productive on Windows. You know, and that's one of the reasons people choose .NET. And so it made sense to implement those on these other operating systems. Windows has some low-level functionality that makes it possible for us to build those features. ETW is an example of that. That stands for
event tracing?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. I couldn't remember what the E stood for. Event tracing for Windows. And so those technologies naturally don't exist on other operating systems. So we had to find the analogs for those. In lots of cases, other operating systems have exactly the same needs, and so they just implement them differently. We found what those first-class components were and then built these same kind of systems on top of that. And I think that's what developers expect from us. They expect those same kind of experiences that they've always had.
Very great. And I think before we kind of move on to the next little bit, is one of the other really awesome things we talked about was the cross-platform SQL library, which we now have support for. Can you talk about what kind of had to be done for that to work?
Yeah. So as you know, SQL Server is a native component, a large one. And so when the folks first built SQL Client, ADO.NET, in the .NET framework, the part underneath that kind of powered the query engine on the client side, that was all built in native code, and it had a lot of dependencies on Windows, and I think that was a fairly natural thing to do when they were building it, say, 10 years ago. When they looked at making a SQL Client available on other operating systems, they realized that trying to port that native code was probably going to be a challenge. And also, they saw what we were doing with .NET Core. And so they thought, well, maybe we'll just write this in C Sharp. Maybe that's the better plan. There's actually some core components that are now on top of .NET Core, like networking. We could just take advantage of those. And if it was all in C Sharp, then our code would just run on all the other operating systems that the .NET Core team might port to in the future. And so that's what they did. And so now SQL Client, pretty much top to bottom, is written in C Sharp. And now they basically don't have to do any more work after that to support other operating systems. So I think they're pretty happy with that decision. We think it's a good decision. And they're good to go.
Great. Very cool to hear. Before we move on to the demo, another thing we showed was actually kind of a preview of some of the features of C# 7. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about that, Matt?
Right. So we showed a prototype of one language feature that is pattern matching. We actually showed it as we're evolving C# 7, and it's still in its early stages, but we showed it as an example of being able to have prototypes run as Visual Studio extensions, as V6s inside of Visual Studio, which is an ability that we're shipping now. Pattern matching specifically fits into this world where your data is described separately from your functionality. In sort of the classic object-oriented paradigm that C# has embraced since version 1, you describe all your functionality together with your type hierarchies. You have virtual methods that do different things depending on what shape you are, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if you need to separate that out, it gets pretty clumsy in an object-oriented language. And we're sort of stealing / borrowing ideas from functional programming languages that have better mechanisms for making that slick. And pattern matching is a really core feature of that. So we wanted to share that out early. People can follow the evolution of these features and the building of those prototypes on GitHub, since we're all open source with that.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Well, I think with that, we're going to switch over to Damien doing
cool.
A demo.
Awesome.
So while Damien's doing that, after we do the demo, we'll be doing some live Q&A. So if you have questions out there, make sure to let us know, and we'll be going at these guys with everything you got. So I think Damien's going to show us a few different ways for using ASP.NET 5 now.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So what I wanted to show you guys first was we launched a new website yesterday to make it easier to get ASP.NET. And so, funnily enough, we called it Get ASP.NET. So if you go to get.asp.net, you're presented with this screen here. And in a moment, I'll show you what it actually looks like when you're on a Mac. So we wanted to make this a tailored experience now that we're cross-platform, so that you actually get the right experience depending on what operating system you're on. And if you go to it from a mobile phone, we show you something a little bit different because, you know, how are you going to install it on a mobile phone? So head up here in order to get the latest pieces. We have a link off here, obviously, to the existing release of ASP.NET as well, 4.6. And then we have a link off here to how to get going with ASP.NET 5 RC, which is what we're talking about mostly today. There's a little bit of detail here about the various tools and things that you can use it with as well. So with that, I'm going to jump over to Visual Studio. I've got the Visual Studio 2015 with the RC1 tooling of ASP.NET 5 installed that I installed yesterday, the public bits. And I want to just take you through a very quick overview of some of the things that are new inside ASP.NET 5 projects, so some things that people may not have seen before. So the first one is this file called project.json. So as part of building our new system and making it work well cross-platform, We basically designed a new project system, one that works well from the command line and that we can build great tooling experiences on top of, whether you're on Windows, Mac, or Linux. And so project.json is really the foundation of that. It's also a realization that we now live in a package-based world in .NET, and so we need to be able to rationalize about what my dependencies are with a little bit more complexity behind the scenes than just, oh, this is an assembly that I need to load. I need to be able to say, for example, I have a list of dependencies here, but I don't actually stipulate where they come from. Okay, I say, I have a dependency that is called microsoft.asp.net.authentication.cookies, and this is the version that I expect, but I'm not telling the system that that's a DLL on disk, or that it's in something like a GAC, or it's in this folder here, or it comes from NuGet. There are conventions that will dictate how this gets resolved when I actually go ahead and do a restore and then finally a compile. Generally, these will all be NuGet packages, but because of this flexibility, I can do things like switch this out and now load source for one of these open source projects instead of loading it from a NuGet package, and I don't have to change the way I reference them in my project, which is really kind of nice. The other thing that's worth pointing out down here is this feature down here, which is the frameworks that I'm currently compiling for. So I mentioned this briefly before, is that we can compile for both the full .NET framework, which is that DNX451 moniker there, and also .NET Core, which is the DNX Core 50 moniker there, at the same time in my project. Now, I can actually see the results of that a little better. If I come over here to the Solution Explorer, you can see under my References node, I have DNX451 and DNX Core 5.0 listed as framework references. So it means I'm actually compiling this application for two frameworks simultaneously. And if I explode these out, you can see we have nice new tooling that shows my logical sort of NuGet hierarchy. So in this case, I can see that these dependencies were resolved as NuGet packages because they have the little NuGet logo next to them. But when I'm running on the .NET framework, DNX451, I have a number of framework assemblies that are also added. So these are coming from the GAC, effectively. These are being provided by the framework. And if I drill down through these, you can see that within any given package, I can see, well, this package brought in these two packages via a NuGet dependency. This package also introduced a number of framework assemblies, and in this case, it happens to be the same ones that I get for free. And then the actual assembly that was delivered by this package was this tooling.razor.dll. So that's just an example of some of the nice tooling features we have in Visual Studio now to help you reason about this new NuGet-based cross-platform multi-framework world. So the second file that people will see that may have not seen before is this startup.cs file. So this is the file that really stipulates the beginning of my application. It's where I get to configure my application. We're very much code-based configuration now. And so you can see that in my constructor, the first thing I'm doing is creating a configuration builder. This is the thing I use to configure my app. I say I want to load configuration settings from these sources. In this case, I'm loading from a couple of JSON files. Then if I'm running in development, which is a new feature as well. We have environmental awareness in the application now. So we have a development mode, staging mode, and production mode, but you can create any modes that you like. They're just strings, and we have a couple of helper methods for the well-known ones. Then I add a store called user secrets, but I'll talk a little bit about it in a minute. Then I can load some more config from environment variables before I finally go down and actually build the configuration that I'll use throughout the rest of my application. If I come down to this second method here, configure services, this is one of the other large features that we've added is the support for dependency injection. So dependency injection or inversion of control is sometimes known as the ability for you to state upfront in one place, when someone asks for foo, give me this foo. And when someone asks for bar, give me that bar. And I have an example here in this template that is showing how this is actually building that up at the moment. And so we have support for a lot of the common IOC frameworks that people use out there. But we also have a base IOC dependency injection system in the framework itself. So if you just have very simple needs, you can get away with just using those. But if you want to plug in something a little more complex, you can do that, and then that will flow throughout the rest of the application. And so DI, or dependency injection, is core to ASP.NET 5 now. And so you will see this in all ASP.NET 5 applications. And indeed, our own frameworks like MVC and the various other bits of functionality use DI to get their components, which is not only great for your stuff, but you can actually replace stuff in ASP.NET 5 now very easily just by registering a replacement component in the dependency injection system. And then finally, if I come down to the configure method, this is where I actually set up the pipeline that will handle HTTP requests for my application. Traditionally, in ASP.NET, we had a very defined pipeline. There was like n number of events, 15 or so. And when you wanted to write code that handled requests, you could hook any one of those events, or more of them, necessarily. There are no predefined events now. You define what the events are. There's basically handle request. It's a method. And then you can write a piece of code that will do that, and we call those middleware. And then you compose those together one after the other, and they build up the pipeline that will handle your requests. And so here I'm setting up some logging. I then go through and add a couple of pieces of middleware that I use only when I'm in development, things like browser link and a nice developer exception page, which has lots of helpful details that I may not want my users to actually see. And then down here, I start adding support for things like static files. And it's like, well, why do I have to add support for static files? Well, one of the other great tenets of ASP.NET 5 is that you only get what you pay for. Like, you start out with nothing. It's a lightweight, modern web framework, and then you add in the things that you want rather than having to remove things that you don't want. Then I add my identity system, so I get user authentication, authorization, that type of thing, before finally I add what might look familiar, which is, hey, I want to just use MVC at the end of this to compose my application, and that's where you see that at the end here. Now, from that, after you've sort of grokked these two concepts, everything else is fairly similar. If you're an MVC developer, you have controllers. You know, I have a home controller here. It looks pretty much identical to a home controller from MVC 4 or MVC 5. It's just that it's built on top of this new foundation that lets us run cross-platform and have those type of things. So this application is running, or I can hit Control F5 here from VS and get this application to run. If I turn off my function key. And you know, it looks like an ASP.NET application. There's really nothing spectacular to look at here. This is just a file new template. I'm going to jump over now to my Mac. And we'll see if I can get this one to go. All right, so it's going to plug the Mac in here. And we'll have a look at how we enable our development experience over on an alternate platform. So here, just to show that Get ASP.NET site again, you can see here it just has one button, which is Install for Mac, which will download a PKG file, which is, you know, the native installer technology on the Mac, which is nice to see. I'm going to go over to the command line here. And I want to show the yeoman generators that we have that allow us to build ASP.NET 5 applications on other platforms. Now, you can also use these on Windows, but obviously if you're a Visual Studio user, you'll just use Visual Studio to do this. So I'm going to type yo ASP.NET. And then from here, I get this nice interactive prompt saying, well, what type of application do you want to create? I'm going to create a basic web application. I'll call this one Connect Demo. And then there, that's it. Simple, done. I've got a whole bunch of files. So it also gives me some instructions on what to do next. I'm going to change into the folder that was just created. I'm going to run dnu restore, which runs a NuGet restore, so that I get all the packages now in my project so that I can run. That's it. And then I can go ahead and run this application by typing dnx web. So here's my command line experience for ASP.NET 5. And again, this same experience would work on Windows or Linux. So you can see my application is running now. If I flip back to the browser and I bring up localhost port 5000, there's that same application running over here on a Mac. Now, when it comes to editing, we have obviously VS Code now, which is a new cross-platform, very lightweight Visual Studio experience that's focused primarily on code. So I could go ahead and open that folder. We'll hit open here. And we call this one Connect Demo, so I'll hit open. And what we'll see is, you know, a nice code-focused experience, but one that should still be familiar to people who work with .NET. If I open my startup.cs file here, what we're going to see is as it comes in, we can see little things popping up here including IntelliSense references. You know, this is CodeLens. These are features that we traditionally associate with Visual Studio that we now have in Visual Studio Code. And so I can be very productive over here on my Mac. If I go ahead and type configuration, I'm getting statement completion. I'm actually getting more than statement completion. I'm getting IntelliSense. I get the type of things that I would expect in Visual Studio, including refactoring and those type of things in Visual Studio Code running on my Mac over here. So there we go.
Great. Well, thanks, Damien. That's awesome to see. And I love how you showed it on two different platforms, you know, kind of one of the tenets of doing a .NET Core, which is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. So now that we've gone through some demo and talked about the announcements, we're going to move over to some live Q&A. We've already got a few questions queued up, so we'll just go ahead and start out with those. The first one I wanted to get to was, we've seen a big focus on web and ASP.NET 5. You know, we just saw that right now with .NET Core. What about the maturity of the framework for console and service daemon projects, stuff like that?
That's a good question. Console is definitely something we've been working on. So I'll separate those into kind of two pieces. There is a console project today with DNX. We actually have kind of a new plan of sorts for console. Looking forward to RC2, the rest of the release. You'll be able to write console tools to do whatever it is that you want. We announced yesterday, actually, that you can native compile those. Using .NET Native on all three platforms. With respect to daemons in particular, that is definitely something we want to support. We don't have any API per se for supporting daemons like we do with NT services, but that's definitely something that we're looking at. It's a good scenario.
Mm. Okay, great. And where can people go for the documentation and samples? And have these all been updated for the RC release?
Yeah, so we have a new documentation site, so docs.asp.net, mm-hmm. Which itself is open source and runs on the Read the Docs platform. And so there's a lot of great documentation there for RC1 that's been updated. And we're still working very hard to get more and more docs in there. We have people from the community doing it. We have our own people doing it. But that's where people need to go, docs.asp.net.
Speaking about people from the community and contributing, that's one of the questions I think we get pretty often is, you know, Microsoft open sourced .NET essentially, but do we really accept community contributions? Can people really go in and modify the code?
They really can. I mean, so I can speak for the ASP.NET team and Richard can speak for the .NET team, but, you know, we do our work in GitHub. There's no magical secret behind the scenes repo where we do our work. Like, we're literally doing our work in the repos that you see on GitHub. We log our issues there. We discuss our issues there in public. And we accept contributions from the public. We have one particular community member right now who is sending us lots and lots of PRs to do with performance, which is great. So he's going through and scouring our new web server and a lot of the other abstractions and profiling and sending us in PRs. I think he sent like 12 in a day last week, which is fantastic. So we are definitely taking contributions on our side.
Great. And speaking about performance, what does the performance look like compared to running .NET on Windows and .NET on Linux?
So there's a couple of comparisons we can make when it comes to performance. So we have, obviously, ASP.NET 4.x, 4.6, mm-hmm. the previous version that runs on IIS and on Windows only. And then depending on what your scenarios are, obviously, performance is always going to be dictated by what you do in your app. But there's obviously a baseline that comes with choosing a platform. And so we can talk about the baseline and not really so much to the specific apps. We have some benchmarks that are public. We had them up on our GitHub repos as well, ASP.NET WAC benchmarks. And we've been looking at the Tech Empower benchmarks, which is a very popular open source web framework benchmark suite, and looking at how we could run those on ASP.NET 5 or have ASP.NET 5 versions of those and then compare them to ASP.NET 4 and some of the competitive platforms as well. And so, for example, the plain text benchmark, which is a very, very simple benchmark that literally just sends back hello world, mm-hmm. but goes through the full HTTP pipeline, does routing, does all those type of things. For ASP.NET 4.6 on our machine that we used to do this, we got roughly 50,000 to 60,000 requests per second. On the new stack, we just broke 500,000 requests per second. So we're near 10 times faster for that particular benchmark. So that's a huge, huge jump, right? But we're not done yet. Like, we're not satisfied. So, like, the performance things I was talking about, those pull requests get us up to 630,000 requests per second. So we're still making very large jumps, but we still have a long way to go. Because when we look at some of the competing stacks, particularly some of the Java, very well-established high-performance networking stacks, NetE is a great example, they do 2.8 million And so we, but we have that in our sights. Like we, as far as we're concerned, there's no reason we can't get that fast. And so we're going to keep going until we can get there and maybe beyond. So yeah, so we care a lot about performance is the takeaway from that.
Okay, great.
I can actually provide a tiny bit more color on that, which is you actually asked a question at the very start, which is, you know, what's special about RC? So on the .NET Core team, we had two main things in mind. So this will go back to the performance question. One was we wanted to be feature complete across all three operating systems, make sure that all our features worked everywhere because we had to do all that work. They didn't work on Linux and OS X at the start. And the other one was we wanted to have parity performance across all three operating systems. And so, you know, the work that Damien and his team are doing is great. It's super important that the foundation underneath them kind of enables that to happen by having parity performance across all three OSs. And so that was something we wanted to deliver for RC, and we did that.
Great, very cool. So another question out there from the people following us is, I read on the CLI repo that you're planning on changing DNX to .NET. Can you share some details on that?
Sure, that's a project that Damien and I have been working on together. DNX was basically, or is, three things. It's a set of tools, a shared runtime, and runtime services all together. And so we decided when we started looking at native compilation that we should split those things out to give people an opportunity to use maybe just one of those things or just two of those things and not necessarily have to use them all. And so this new .NET system, we'll call it, is the new component. It will replace DNX. The thing that our teams are working on together right now is getting ASP.NET 5 to sit on top of this new tool system, this optional shared framework, and these runtime services that I mentioned. And that's something that we'll have available out in the open relatively soon.
Yeah. And so we are working very hard on that right now. Just to maybe ease some concerns when they hear, oh, we just went RC, but now we're going to sort of rip the guts out and replace it with something else. A lot of the code in the .NET system was taken from DNX.
Absolutely.
And so if you look at the tools that we have, the DNX and DNU, when we started the DOTNET command line, it is quite literally a lot of that same code, but split apart and relayed such that the .NET command line system is more of a driver that runs a set of commands, top level commands like compile and run and pack and those type of things, and then that concept of a shared host and a runtime host, that's been again taken out of DNX and then merged with some of the work the .NET team were doing independently, and now we have a nice sort of cohesive path forward. Where going back to one of the other questions, how do we do console apps for .NET Core? This will answer that question as well as adding things like native support, as well as being the host for ASP.NET 5, and now we have a nice, cohesive, cross-platform .NET story moving forward.
It's really just one of those boring engineering, let's do componentization projects. That's really all we're doing.
Right.
Okay, great. So another question from the people out there is, would you migrate something like ON OAuth middleware to ASP.NET 5?
Great question. So how did we migrate? So people can migrate their own middleware fairly simply. So if you were using middleware or had written middleware on top of our previous Katana stack, which was kind of our playground for a lot of the thinking that has moved into ASP.NET 5, that will move over very, very simply because the core abstraction that you dealt with in that world, which was the iApp Builder, and the delegate or the app func, which was the request func or delegate that would flow through building up that pipeline I talked about before, those have come over almost verbatim. Like I think iApp Builder changed to iApplication Builder, and it is the same interface, it just has a different name. And the request delegate has the same signature. So if you have written middleware on top of the previous Katana stack with those constructs, that will be an extremely easy port for you. Bearing in mind, depending on whether you want to run on .NET Core or not, there may be some things you have to deal with when you move to .NET Core. When it comes down to pure OWEN, which is a layer underneath what we did in Katana again, that gets a little more complex. The pure OWEN doesn't have a construct. It doesn't have a request delegate with a signature that is typed. It has a much longer request delegate, and it doesn't have a concept of an app builder. So you can still absolutely plug those into ASP.NET 5. We have an adapter that lets you plug in pure OWEN middleware, and we can run ASP.NET 5 on a pure Owen web server as well. So we have Owen compatibility is the way we say it, but we're not built directly on top of Owen in ASP.NET 5.
Okay, great. So another question I wanted to ask was, so basically, since ASP.NET and .NET Core are both open source, if I'm working on that, and obviously we accept community contributions, but if I want to make changes to that where I run it locally, is that something I can do?
Yeah, you can.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I mean, actually, with all the projects, including the ones that Mads works on, we have a few kind of, I'll almost say, rules by which we open source our code, meaning we have to satisfy these rules before we do that. One is we have to be able to take pull requests before we publish repos. We actually published two more repos yesterday, by the way. We have to be able to take pull requests and have contribution guidelines in place so that people know how to go do that. And then the other key tenet is they have to be buildable. So you clone the repo and you typically type build.cmd or build.sh, depending on which operating system you're on. And then the product builds and then you can use it. So that's important for everything we do, and that is the case.
Mm. And so one of the other features I alluded to before was when I'm declaring my dependencies in that project.json file, you remember I said I didn't stipulate where they came from. They could be NuGet packages, they could be source. Well, this is one of the scenarios that we wanted to enable, is that I could create an ASP.NET 5 application, but then I might want to customize MVC, or I may think I found a bug, so I want to bring it in and debug it. You can clone the MVC repo, you can go into a separate JSON file in that solution, the global JSON file, and you can add the path to your MVC repo. And then when you rerun restore, it'll go, oh, I have source for MVC. I'm going to use that instead of a package based on the convention of where you told it to look based on that path. And then when you run and compile, you're actually running against your local copy of the MVC source code. And at that point, if you wish to make a change and fork and do all those type of things, you absolutely can. You can bundle up your application with your custom version MVC and deploy it. And hopefully you'll send that change back to us in a pull request and we can put it in for everyone else.
Yep.
So speaking of which, another project that we have out there open source and accepting contributions is Roslyn.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that's gone and what the path forward is for Roslyn?
Well, so as you say, Roslyn is open source as well. Being able to build separately is one thing that we've also focused on. We have the special niggle in that we're building the tooling support for C# and Visual Basic as well in Visual Studio, and so we have been working on making it possible for people to get that side of it also building locally, and we'll be continuing to do that. Roslyn is really a framework for, you can say it's a language engine. We sort of took our old compiler and rewrote it as a big API, a big live engine that you can ask questions about source code. And then we're building all our language support in Visual Studio and for other editors out there as well, building that completely on that engine. And we're continuing that path. So one of the nice new features that we are offering is a REPL for C#, and soon to come for Visual Basic, that people can go and see a demo on one of the pre-recorded videos that are up on the site for Connect. And REPL is essentially an interactive window or a command line where you can type in C#, have it evaluated, type in some more, have that evaluated. So it's really good for when you want to explore an API, you want to pull in some sample code and just run it directly without having to create all the scaffolding that a full C# project gives you. So it's a really good augmentation, both to Visual Studio and to the command line experience for when you want to do something a little quick and scripty, or want to explore things. That's one of the big things we're building on Roslyn right now.
Okay, great. So another question from out there is, if I'm a JavaScript full-stack developer and I currently use Node and Express, what sort of the reasons that you might recommend using ASP.NET 5?
If you like it.
C#
is the one, that's obviously our big, we're not going to rest on our laurels and say we have C#, hence we're not going to do any more work, but C# is a really big, draw for us, absolutely. But it really comes down to, we want developers to use what they like. And so I would encourage you to try ASP.NET and sort of go through some of the fundamentals. Like, I think it's a good practice for any developer to go through and try an alternate stack maybe once a month or so. Just spend a couple of hours doing a hello world and using some of the tooling and things to see what some advantages. even if you don't end up using it, you might learn some things that you could apply to your existing stack. But I'm not going to be presumptive enough to try and try and convert people from using a full JavaScript stack to ASP.NET. I like ASP.NET. I like Node as well. Like I'm a web developer and I like using lots of different stacks. But I would encourage people to look at it. We have C Sharp. We have fantastic tooling, a very good debugging experience, especially if you're on Windows right now, and the debugging experience in VS Code is getting better day by day. Mm-hmm. And we intend to bring more of those very heavily integrated and sort of highly productivity-focused developer features that we traditionally associate with Visual Studio across into things like VS Code so that we can spread that, put a productivity on our stack across all the platforms that we're now targeting. So yeah, that's kind of where I would leave that. I'm not going to try and drill through
that's
a bunch
fair,
of features.
I think. That's fair. So speaking about ASP.NET, and if you are new to that, what do you recommend? Like, how do you get started with ASP.NET?
Now that is a great question. So there's a bunch of different ways you could go. So obviously you can get books and those type of things. We have our docs site that I talked about before, which we are still building out. It's nowhere near complete and it's nowhere near where I want it to be right now, but we have a good starter content there, and that's a good place to look at. We have a lot of links to videos that we've previously recorded, sessions like this, more interactive sessions from all across the world over the last couple of years. So if you're like watching videos, that's obviously something you can do. Get to user groups, those type of things. We have a lot of our MVPs and great community members are talking about ASP.NET 5 now, which is fantastic. And then obviously look at the code. Go to GitHub, look at our source code. There's a bunch of samples there as well. Different developers learn in different ways. Some people like to read the framework and understand how the things flow together to get an understanding. Other people just like to go through quick samples and tutorials. So we have all of those things.
Okay, great. Meds, you mentioned adding some features to C# to make it easier to avoid mem copies. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
That was mentioned briefly in the demos yesterday as well. We have to be aware that the time where machines get bigger and bigger for every release is over. It's long over, and we're all interested in working on devices that are smaller and smaller. And there are some places in a language like C# where it's just too hard to avoid doing stupid things with memory. So we're not trying to turn C# into like a systems programming language or anything like that, but we are looking at a few things that will help you avoid a bunch of copying. One of the things we're looking at the language level is to allow you, just like you can pass ref parameters to say big structs, to allow you to also return those and keep refs in local so that you can point into, say, big chunks of struct arrays that you allocated for your game loop up front. You can pass references into that array around without having to do copying back and forth of those big structs. That's really important for writing efficient games, for instance, in a Unity style setting. Another thing that we're looking at sort of across the framework and the language is if we can do something better with array slicing, where you can have essentially a point to a window into an array of memory, or maybe even a window into some unmanaged memory, and treat that as an array in and of itself. Like pass that window around as if it were its own array, so you don't have to do copying of chunks of arrays and pass those around. That's really the idea. Where is the stupid copying, and how can we avoid that in a good way in the language and in the framework?
Okay, great. Thank you. So one of the questions we got there is, if somebody is already a Microsoft shop and they're building an application, or they have an application built off ASP.NET 4.6, what's the motivation for them to switch over to 5, outside of the cross-platform stuff, which we all know is great? What's their big reason to switch over?
So as we mentioned before, like the big draw cards for 5 are it runs on .NET Core, which gives you the cross-platform. So if you don't care about cross-platform, then we can discount that. It gives you the framework portability. So if you want to be able to deploy the framework with your application, that is a .NET Core feature, not a .NET Framework feature, then that may be a draw card to you. Obviously, there's a lot of investment in ASP.NET 5 right now. So obviously, we're doing a lot of active work. We're doing a lot of our new feature work in there. Because it's a new stack, we can break some things that we can't particularly break in the existing ASP.NET. And so we are somewhat limited. It's funny, we talk about this internally. When you consider something stable, kind of the opposite of stable is unstable, right? And so, like, if you look at a framework and you want to choose a framework that is stable, generally one of the factors that makes it stable is that it doesn't change often. And so it makes it difficult to innovate continually on something that is live and running millions and millions of sites when you need to ensure stability in that. So at this moment where we're building ASP.NET 5, this is kind of our one chance to make very large changes underneath the covers without potentially risking existing applications. Okay, and so there are going to be new features that show up in ASP.NET 5 and beyond that just will not appear in the ASP.NET 4.x world because of we can't make those sort of magnitude of changes without risking stability. And so that if those type of features that are coming online in ASP.NET 5 are appealing to you, then that may be one of the reasons that you want to come across. Some of the dependency-based stuff I talked about, so the fact that we're very NuGet-based now, mm-hmm. And everything is open source all the way down to and including .NET Core and the CLR and the Jira, if that type of thing is important to you, you want a fully open source stack, ASP.NET 5 is certainly the one to choose.
Right. And speaking of that, this is a question I think we get more often as Microsoft does more open source, but why did we decide to open source .NET in the ASP.NET?
So we think of it more as why not, right? Well, I think that was really the pivot that took place a few years ago. If you'd had this question, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was internally like, why should we do open source? Now it is very much why not, and I think the reasons for doing open source become self-evident once you've immersed yourself in that community for a very short period of time, but I think things are just better when more people are looking at them. And when, you know, this idea of some type of meritocracy where the best things stay because more people are involved in them. And that's not to say that we are designed by public committee. Like, we're certainly not. We're still the benevolent dictator here, let's be clear. But there are a lot more eyes involved in the development process. And, you know, we can take contributions from the community, which is a huge thing. We can work with the community on those contributions so that you can effectively become part of our virtual team. We think that's really, really important.
Absolutely. Great.
Yeah, you've seen, if you look at a project like F#, which has been open source for a while, it's actually sort of been a bit of a front runner for us in terms of open source, in that it's no longer really, you can't say that F# is a Microsoft product anymore. A very significant part of what goes on in the whole F# stack is contributed by non-Microsoft people. It happens to be a Microsoft employee, the Microsoft research employee who's the language designer, but it's no longer a project that is just inviting people to come participate. It is a true community project. I think it's interesting to ponder as we go forward how far we can move in that direction with our bigger project as well.
Absolutely. So one question out there is, what's the best way to try the latest version of Roslyn?
What's the best way to try it? Well, we are... there's an RTM version, obviously, that's out. If you want to play with what's there, what's there in the GitHub repo, we make it buildable, and we put out V6s and so on regularly. As I said, we are working towards having a way that we can publish prototypes that work in Visual Studio of new language features and IDE features built on Roslyn. And as we get into that mode, it'll be easier to get experimental versions and try them out. We're not quite there yet, but hopefully soon you'll be able to try things out without having to build it on your own machine and kind of tinker with it from a source code level angle on it. So,
right.
Soon.
Okay. So another question for you. What does the C# REPL do to run code? Does it incrementally compile or does it use some type of reflection?
It uses an API that's part of Roslyn that incrementally compiles, essentially. It takes every chunk and compiles it into an existing live world of code. It doesn't use reflection the same way that that you may be used to, but it, it does an incremental compilation style, essentially.
Okay, great.
It keeps a live environment of state that you can play with. Yeah.
Great. So yesterday in the keynote, Polita demoed a C# 7 language feature. Can you say more about where C# is headed, what's coming down the road?
Right. So luckily, we do all our design in the open now, so people can kind of look us over the shoulder and see. We have a bunch of features that we are currently investigating, some of which are big and some of which are small, some of which will not make it in the end and some of which will. And you can kind of see the whole sausage getting made. You can have your favorite feature and you can see it be designed and then you can see it get killed because of some reason or other that it won't make it in. as a sort of overall guiding principle right now, we're thinking very much about using C# in a cloud world, in a world where every system is a connected system. I talked a little before about how data and functionality get more separated. That's very much because of that shift into every system being connected. You get data down the wire, you want to do your thing with it. That's also a shift where you tend to you tend to think more about data and less about objects. So it's more like you get some data that is relatively dumb in and of itself. And to work with data, it's often a good idea to use a more immutable paradigm, if you will. You describe your data as immutable data structures, and then you work on those data structures by making new ones instead of mutating the existing ones, because that makes it easier to share that data across a connected system. So a lot of the features we're looking at are inspired by the connected systems or the cloud world that we're in today. That's sort of what guides what's important right now. That's where we see people having increasingly clunky C# code that we can make better by adding new features.
Okay, great. So for all the projects that you guys work on, is the way to do feedback outside of, you know, changing it myself and making a pull request, is it a user voice or is there a forum that they should go to? Like, what's the best way to say, hey, this is the feature I think you guys should implement next?
You know, if you want a direct link to my team, it's GitHub. Like, we live and die in GitHub.
On issues.
On issues.
Filing an issue?
On issues.
Same on Roslyn.
Same on Roslyn? Okay. Yeah. So the best way is to file an issue. Great. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So another question. Will changes from DNX to .NET impact DNVM?
Absolutely. So DNVM is the .NET version manager tool, one of the sort of the third in the little trifecta of tools that we have, the DNX, DNU, and DNVM. And it's the one that lets you choose which version of DNU and DNX you want to run if you have more than one of them installed, because we have side-by-side portability. We haven't actually figured out exactly what the replacement for DNVM is going to be. It could well, and I think we will know within another month, it'll be either we have DNVM as it is, but it'll be changed to work with the .NET CLI. It'll be some part of the .NET CLI itself, it'll be some other mechanism. I think the short way of saying this is that there will be some way to manage the versions.
Yeah.
So you can have more than one on your machine and select one. We're just not entirely sure what it's going to be yet.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason is that with DNX, it's monolithic in nature. It's not meant as a negative term. It's one thing. And so as a result, it's easy to reason about what acquiring a new version would be and pivoting between them means. In this new system where we intentionally broke DNX into three pieces, it's a little bit less obvious what pivoting would mean. And it's possible also that there might be some scenarios where, and this is actually probably where we will land, is that you leave your tools unchanged, and then it's maybe something like a shared framework or those runtime services that I referred to before that you might want to change, and maybe that's the pivoting that we're looking for. So as Damien says, probably sometime before the end of the year, we'll figure that out. We'll publish a design doc for like request for comment and get feedback on what that DNVM change would look like.
Okay, great. And now both the ASP.NET team and the .NET team, they've been very open with, you know, the roadmap going forward. I think it's actually also on GitHub. Can you share us any details, though, of what's coming now that we've got RC1 out?
Yeah, and so I think we've alluded a couple of times to RC2. There will be a second release candidate. The big thing in that will be the switch from the DNX to the new .NET command line experience. Mm-hmm. And obviously there will be some issues and things that we'll fix from RC1. We're not going to get everything right the first time. And any final sort of API scrubs and things that we have to do will be as part of that RC2. That will probably land sometime next year in a month that ends in burr, as my dev manager likes to say, like February burr. and then after that, with the little follow-on, we've said for a while that we'll ship RTM in quarter one next year. So by the end of March, we plan to have our RTW or RTM release.
Yeah. Okay.
Two more things on that. So I talked a tiny bit before about native compilation. That'll be coming before we ship RTM. And then the other one is, We've played around with this a little bit, but we're going to take it super seriously, which is delivering packages for native package managers, delivering kind of end user installers, so that'd be MSI and PKG for OS X, And then the last thing, which we actually got a surprising amount of feedback on yesterday, is great Docker images. So, you know, we've been focusing this conversation more on the GitHub side of things, which is certainly important. But then there's this question of like, oh, well, how do I acquire this either for a development environment or for my production environment? And so that will all be solved for RC2/RTM.
Yeah, in fact, we hope to solve that much sooner so that people can get the bits.
Yeah, yeah.
Dev bits.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Totally agreed.
Just to help set expectation on something you said there around native, we don't expect native compilation to be fully supported for ASP.NET in the RTM timeline. There is some challenges in what we can currently support with the native tooling with some of the concepts we have, like dependency injection and runtime compilation and reflection-based discovery and all these type of things. Over time, we want all those things to work. Mm-hmm. But for the RTM that we're just talking about, I don't want customers to expect that they'll be able to bring up their ASP.NET 5 application, compile it native, and go to the races. I don't think that will be landing by that time.
That's V2.
That's V2. Okay. But we do want to get there.
Yep. Okay, great. And we mentioned Linux a lot. What Linux distributions have we been specifically targeting for deployment and support?
That's a great question. So right now, the list is very small. It's effectively Ubuntu, CentOS. There was the Red Hat announcement last week, and obviously OS X. The target, as I currently understand it, is we're looking at the set of Linux distros that are supported on Azure. That sounds like a good start. So let's start with those. We have this great cloud hosting infrastructure that runs Linux. Why don't we target that first as the officially supported ones? And that doesn't mean that you won't run on other Linux distros. For example, we have run ASP.NET 5 on Linux on a Raspberry Pi. We don't support ASP.NET 5 on Linux on a Raspberry Pi, but this is open source. People hack. That's the whole one of the whole things that we're trying to enable. Someone got it running on Lego Mindstorms last week, which is awesome, right? Yeah. And so you will be able to run it in many places that we can't even conceive, but in terms of what's actually publicly supported, like officially, I think that list that's currently listed on Azure is these are the supported distros on Azure is a fantastic start.
Also with Red Hat in particular, as you said, we made this announcement with them, which we're really excited about. You actually haven't seen us make any substantive changes, like say, for example, on .NET Core yet. We're actually still waiting on some license keys from them. As soon as we have those, we will actually set up CI for RHEL, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, there, and you'll actually see us. Hopefully we find some issues that we can go fix and make the Red Hat experience really great. As soon as we get this one little piece done, we can actually start work on that, which will be great.
It's always the administrative stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Great. Well, we are short on time, and I've got one more question. But before I get to that, is there anything else you guys wanted to close out, recap with?
I have one piece, which I think is really interesting, which is, so one of the repos we released yesterday was called CoreRT. And so it's this kind of native-oriented runtime that .NET Native sits on. And one thing that I think Mads will appreciate is one of the tenets of that is it's this super small runtime. Basically, all it has is a GC in it. And but we actually need a lot of other runtime services in order to run apps like ASP.NET. And so we've actually been able to write those pieces of the runtime in C#. That's actually a new direction that we have, is writing the runtime in C#. There's some other platforms that do similar things. And so we now consider, at least on my team, C# to be a great runtime language, which is kind of an interesting new scenario.
It's great.
Great, awesome. So my last question is, can I really legitimately call Microsoft if I need support for running .NET on Linux?
Do you want my phone number?
Yeah, I think I hear your phone buzzing or something.
Yeah, don't call me. You absolutely can. Yeah, you absolutely can. So if you, it's not particularly new. Like if you have an existing support agreement, you have product support, whatever we call them now, customer support services, product support services, you can call them with your issues running .NET Core.
Actually, we put a phone number on the .NET blog yesterday.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure there's a... Yes, there's a Go Live section on the .NET blog. It certainly lists a URL to go to. And it lists the phone number and the times of the day in the Pacific time zone when they'll answer the phone.
That's fantastic. All right, well, thank you guys. So today we talked about what's new with ASP.NET and .NET Core, the RC release. We talked about some of the features coming down the road for C# itself, as well as Rosalind. So I really want to thank you guys for being here, Damien, Mads, Rich. Thank you guys, appreciate it. This was a really great conversation. Everybody out there, thank you for watching. This has been fun, and hopefully you'll have fun playing with the stuff we discussed today. Thanks.
Cheers.
Thank you.